Welcome to Making Connections, a WMMT series on diversifying our future.
2014 marked the 50th anniversary of President Lyndon B. Johnson famously declaring America's war on poverty from a front porch in Martin County, Kentucky. Today, poverty has decreased, but Eastern Kentucky continues to rank last in the nation in terms of health, wealth, and well-being. When the war on poverty is talked about, it's often written off as a failure. But as the SOAR initiative tries to tackle once again the issues our region faces, it's worth looking backwards to that transformative time to ask what really happened and what can we learn from it. Robert Schaefer, age 84, and Hollis West, 83, are now retired and live in Berea and Lexington, respectively. They came from different worlds, but their paths crossed in the 1960s when they both moved to the mountains to work with the community action agencies set up through the War on Poverty.
My feelings were always toward having people involved in their lives.
Hollis West.
And you know, the original legislation for the poverty program, all the community action programs were supposed to have one-third poor people on the board, one-third local officials, and one-third agencies. And I believed that stuff. I thought, well, that's really what I want to do.
West grew up in a coal mining family in southern Illinois. After joining the Air Force and going to college on the GI Bill, he worked in job training and community action agencies in Michigan, upstate New York, and West Virginia before landing a position as head of the community action agency in Knox County in 1965.
The office OEO had funded an 8-county Cumberland Valley Community Action Agency.
Robert Schaefer.
Which was in the hands of those people used to running everything, the politicians and the school system. And they refused to involve the poor, which was part of the legislation, the maximum feasible participation of the poor in the decision-making process.
And so the Federal Office of Economic Opportunity, or OEO, took all the money back, and they sent Schaefer, who was originally from New Jersey, to Knox County as a technical assistant with the explicit goal of making sure more poor people were involved. From the beginning, their approach was different from the local officials.
I went to the people and asked them what they wanted instead of what we wanted for them to do. And what they told me is they wanted roads and they wanted jobs. And they wanted education, you know. Well, that's what I started to do then.
West tracked down surplus equipment from the government in Ohio and brought it back to begin a roads program. But it was the poor people who decided which roads got fixed, not the county officials. Schaefer found surplus government sewing machines and began a small business that trained people in manufacturing garments and upholstery. And then, biggest of all, they were given an old building. Working with people from the community, they tore it down, cleaned all the bricks, and completely rebuilt it into an office space and industrial building, where they started a furniture business and a craft shop. Bob Schaefer.
The federal office hired designers and marketers. They sent a designer down, and the designer looks at what the people are able to do and what they're working at. And then they began to design these products, which were just fantastic. One of the ones, it was a mother pig with little babies, snap wands, you know, and children just really loved these. And so those are the items that were in Bloomingdale's. And then they were in Marshall Fields in Chicago. They were in Neiman Marcus in Dallas. They were in stores in Los Angeles. It amazes me when I look back at it. See, this is what it's hard to help people to understand today. What it meant to the poor people to see that building and see that this belonged to the poor.
Perhaps their capstone achievement was founding JobStart in 1968 with a board that was 50% poor people. JobStart became the Kentucky Highlands Investment Corporation, which continues to this day. By the early 1970s, the furniture business was grossing around $2.5 million annually. But it wasn't all a rosy picture. As their success grew, so did tensions between the county poor and the local power structure.
What happened is, as we became more and more productive, they became more and more desirous of regaining control. And Hollis is a good example. They planned to fire him. The night that that was to occur, Hollis spent the afternoon before on the local radio calling out all of the people he knew, the politicians and leaders who were going to come to fire him. So that when we went into the room that night, it was packed in the courthouse, and somebody told me there were 50 guns in the crowd. And because Hollis had done that, these guys didn't show up. And the people, if you can imagine, the people sensed that they had won. And it was just a tremendous lift for everybody.
The other thing, I hired a guy as one of my top officials that had been a bootlegger and actually spent some time in prison. And in essence, he was my bodyguard. People didn't fool with him. So they probably would have killed me if it hadn't been for him. I mean, they, at one time, they tried to burn the craft store down and things like that. But I mean, it was a real battle.
I have such admiration for Hollis because of his courage. He was really in a very tight spot, and he just never knuckled under. And you see, people respond to strength like that, and it gives them strength.
For Schaefer, it was that sense of teamwork and solidarity that was the most meaningful and critical element of their work. And it's the part that he most holds on to when looking back.
One of the things in Night Comes the Cumberlands that I appreciated is at the end, he said, talks about the economic depression of Eastern Kentucky, but he said, more tragic is the depression of spirit, which left people listless, hopeless, and without ambition. Now, do you see, that spirit was exactly what came alive in this experience that we had together. And to me, that's what's lacking in the whole SOAR business. It's the same people who are used to determining how things are done, and they've got to have the people who make up the majority of the population of Eastern Kentucky to be there and feel ownership and be active and be in the decision-making. So it's just a shame to see this history repeated.
Same thing. Same thing's happening. They're going in and there's no participation of poor people. You know, now they may get a couple of people that looks poor on the books, and you know, but it's the same crap that's gone on forever, and I'm sad to see that. To me, that's where it stands right now.
It bothers me to hear people talk that the war on poverty was a failure, that it was a waste of money. Boy, talk to those people who were part of this experience that I described, they wouldn't say that. And many of those people today are still, their children were in Head Start. They got employment and training in the program, and they have gone on, some of them to college, some of them, you know, to business. They would not say, boy, that was a failure. People began to see a positive possibility for their lives.
The election of Richard Nixon in 1968 led to the eventual disbanding of OEO and an end to the war on poverty.
How can you judge? I mean, those people would not have been where they were. You can't judge people by that. How many jobs they got. You know, did it change their view about the way that the world works? Why don't they take this money that the government's putting into these SOAR programs and set up a poor people's group that's got control of the money.
Hollis West, 83, with Robert Schaefer, 84, veterans of the 1960s War on Poverty in Eastern Kentucky. Reporting for WMMT with Mimi Pickering, I'm Sylvia Ryerson. Making Connections is brought to you by WMMT, Mountain Community Radio. Find out more at makingconnectionsnews.org.